Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Allegro for helping us make this show happen. Another poor week for ground conditions, costs continuing to rise at farm level and lost weight gain and lost milk and lost grass on nearly all farms. This week I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan once again. And later in the show, we'll hear from John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. First up, it's the quick fire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk at farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868366465. Adam, looking to you first here on the quick fire questions that came in from farmers all around the country. Adam, first one, let me read it out here now. In Skip, can you change from a spring calving herd to an autumn calving herd? Reference number is 40. Can it be done in one step or done over two years? Talk to me, Adam.
So my understanding there, Jack, is that the scheme year runs from the 1st of July to the 30th of June. So once your cows calve at any point in between those two dates, which they will, and you fulfil the requirements of the scheme then for every calf in terms of weighing and in terms of genotype and 70% of the reference number that you have. The only issue there I could see was weights have to be submitted by the 30th of November. So if you slip round to autumn, your calves have to be 50 days old by the time they're weighed. So if you're autumn calving maybe in August, September, you're fine. But if you're later on there, you're going to run it up tight in terms of weighing those cows and calves in the scheme. But there's no issue with changing as far as I can see.
Okay, nice one. Well, that's a quick question. I'm normally grazing first supply slurry. Let's just start again on this one, Adam. My last quick question. Normally I apply slurry after first round grazing and go with 18-6-12 on the 1st of April for silage. Slurry doesn't look like an option with ground conditions. Any idea how much extra fertilizer I should apply to make up for no slurry?
I guess the big one here is, and we had a bit of a chat about this actually with John O'Loughlin on the piece at the end of this in terms of this being a really important year. Every year is going to be important now for taking soil samples and having a nutrient management plan to know how much P and K you can bring onto the farm, because that's all changing now. You have to prove that you need that P and K, we'll say, in terms of buying. And if you're buying in meal and you're importing slurry as well, it's really important. So you sort of give the fertilizer advice based on maybe an index of where it's at. But if that slurry was delivering, if it was 2,500 gallons, it's delivering 23 units of nitrogen, 13 units of phosphorus and 80 units of K. So you have to replace that, obviously, with fertilizer. First cut silage on a index 2 soil, we'll say, is 100 units of N, 24 units of P and 120 units of K. And very simply, I'm putting it down here, 2 bags of urea, small bags, 50 kilo bags to the acre, and 3.5 bags of 0730. That delivers the silage requirement without slurry on an index 2 soil. If it's an index 3 soil, it's a little bit less. So it's a little bit complicated in terms of, it depends on where the indexes are on the farm.
Yeah. We don't have the information in terms of where
the big one is the K. I guess the slurry supplies an unbelievable amount of K. So if you don't have slurry out, you have to really, we'll say, up the K level in the fertilizer.
Yeah, potassium is needed. Excellent. Okay. Next one, Adam, for you. Is the CBV having any influence yet in Bendon last week? And I couldn't see it improving the value of my calves, although I'm not sure what would, given the number that was there and shippers didn't seem hugely active. Adam, your thoughts on how the CBV is going down around the ring?
Yeah, probably not as well as we would have liked, Jack. And it's disappointing, I suppose, to see. Look, I've been critical in the past of dairy farmers not using good enough bulls on the dairy herd, and now I suppose beef farmers had a chance maybe to send a signal to dairy farmers that maybe they pay maybe a little bit more for good quality high CBV calves, but at the moment that's not happening in the ring at all. So I guess if you're a dairy farmer and you've been using good bulls, well, you might ask yourself the question, well, what's the point? Because if there's no market signal to for higher value CBV cows making more money, I'd hope that wouldn't change on the dairy side of things, and maybe it'll take time to bed in, but definitely at the moment there's very little relationship between price and CBV. It's all on a strong calf, I guess, without CBV at all.
Okay, we might touch off that again later in the show. Thanks, Adam. Back to you in a bit. Darren, here's here's a couple for you that came in. Would it be possible to talk around TAMS 3 Tranche 1? I haven't got approval as of yet. I'm looking to change out cattle slats. I have a shed built in 1998 with a mass concrete tank. Shed was not a grant spec shed at the time. Department is asking now for an engineer's report to say the tank will last another 8 years. I'm totally lost with regards to the TAMS grant process. It looks like the department wants to show it provides grants, but availing of the grant is impossible. These are just my thoughts. A lot of people I've encountered have the same opinion. I think this is an issue that needs to be highlighted, and with your help, it would be greatly appreciated. Darren, where are you on the likes of that and TAMS 3, I suppose, in general?
Yeah, to be honest, I have to go back to the terms and specifications. I've wrote about that in the past in a health focus around replacing, say, slats and about putting in agitation points. And if I remember correctly, the terms and specifications said as long as the tank was built to S123, which would be a mass concrete tank, said that there was no eligibility for blocked tanks or the agitation point was inside, that it should. Now, I have heard as well of an engineer's report being looked for, but that was where maybe the agitation points were coming out of the shed. So I'll have to go back to the drawing board, Jack, and maybe it's something we'll ask the department to say to comment on. Okay. I wasn't aware. Now, I know they can ask for it if there's any doubt over the tank, but frustrating for that, definitely frustrating for that person, because they'd be hoping to get approval and to get something done now in the coming months when Captain goes.
Sharon, I think I read before if there's an internal spine wall, they might need an engineer's report for that.
Okay.
If there's new slats sitting, in other words, sometimes it's double tank, we'd say. They might need an engineer's report for that. But I haven't heard it now for a basic tank, you know.
Maybe Jack will get more, say, information off the listener that's sent in as well, just to find out. It'd be a useful one to tease out, because it's a fairly common job.
It is, like, well, 1998 isn't that old of a tank now. You know, I know it's still 25 years old, you know what I mean? But there's a lot of tanks a lot older than that, you know. And farmers are still expecting them to stay going. But anyway, look, we'll come back to it on and maybe get a bit more information. It's an interesting question. Darren, this one is actually coming back to a piece that we had and we talked about, and you maybe might fill up the context, but he says here, I want to just clarify the parcels had been separated and I was consistently told I won't be paid over a number of phone calls. Eventually I got someone at the top of the organic payment section and I've since been told it will be paid. I've had problems with every payment I've had and all seem to be true, no fault of my own. Thanks for your time. Darren, this is acres and organic and a certain parcel of land that was in both schemes. Is that what was the story here?
Well, yeah, that's what we thought anyway, or the context that we thought was that the listener had said that he wasn't going to get paid because there was a riparian zone and the rest of that, say, parcel in, he was putting in for organics, and we had thought that it was in the one lipus number, but he's obviously clarified it's not, and he's clarified that he can get payment, which is the correct resolution. If they were in the one lipus parcel, well, then there wouldn't have been, because it would have been double counting. So it is one of the ones, Jack, where it's good to get, it's good for listeners to go back and give us the positive resolution on it.
Good. And it tallies with the piece, like, in terms of separation. So that's good. Like, just wondering if there's any talk of dribble bars being eligible for TAMS grant again, or is it still only trailing shoe option? And are slurry tankers granted in their own right, or do they have to have the less equipment attached? So two questions, Darren. First, the dribble bars first, and then just slurry tanks.
Yep, I'll take the easy one first about the slurry tanks, Jack. No, they have to be with an attachment. So it's the less element is actually getting the grant for the slurry tank. So that's what's bringing it in. No word on the first part. We've been no word since at all, Jack. It's something myself, Peter Thomas Keaveney, were actually talking about last week, is this where that research is there any update on that? So he was going to go back and talk. I don't know, is it Chagas that was doing it? Or who
Chagas,
was,
yeah, it was, yeah. Chagas Johnstone,
So hopefully we will have an update, not only for Farm TikToks, but around the paper. I'll touch base again with Peter and see is there any update on that.
Sweet. Just one more, Darren, for you on the quickfire, lads. If my entitlements are valued at €152, what should I expect to get for them for a 1 year lease?
Yep, generally from 45% to 50% of the value. Now, I've actually written about that this week, and there's a bit of variation in it. It's probably worth exploring a bit more in the main show, Jack, but as a quick answer, maybe 45% to 50%, and we can talk a bit more about the exact values if that suits later. Okay.
Excellent, that's it. We'll come back to that there maybe later on in the show. Aidan, two quick fires here. I have 20 winter barley straw bales, and they don't soak the water well. I seem to be using far more than usual. Any thoughts why? Aidan, barley straw, not soaking water.
Yeah, I think it's a common enough issue, Jack, this year. I suppose if you think back to last harvest, the weather was broken. Tillage farmers were finding it hard to save the grain, never mind save the straw. And I said there's a lot of straw that was turned numerous times before it was baled. And I just think, Jack, you know, it's kind of brussy. And I see myself at home, it's breaking up very easily. It goes mushy very quickly. And I'd say the soaker just isn't in it. Now, that's, you know, not... Some bales are better than others. So it depends on where, you know, on the conditions and all the rest. But that's my general feeling. I'd say it goes back to wet last that autumn and poor quality straw.
Okay. I actually had the CBV question allocated to you again. Aidan, is CBV having any influence yet in Bandon last week? And I couldn't see it improving the value of my calves, although I am not sure what would have, given the number of calves that were there, over probably 2,000 calves there, and shippers didn't seem hugely active. I mean, the shippers piece has improved, I think, this week, Aidan. But come back to the CBV piece.
I suppose the shippers aren't really that interested in the CBV, to be fair. You know, it's more aimed at the beef farmer who's buying a few calves, or many calves, to rear themselves as dairy calf beef kind of a system. Look, I'd echo Adam's comments on it. You know, I mean, it's disappointing. I suppose there's not much of a drive really either. And maybe there's an information campaign needed by ICBF and Jogas who brought out the index to maybe, you know, to create better awareness of what it is. Because as Adam says, it would be a shame now if dairy farmers came to the conclusion that, listen, it doesn't matter what CBV is, the calf is a calf, and it gets paid, you know, depending on the weather and if the ships are sailing or not. That's what's driving the calf trade. So that would be a bad outcome, because it means then that dairy farmers are going to revert back to what they would have been doing before, which was going for the shortest gestation and the easiest calving bulls they could find to put on their cows. Now, to be fair, you know, there was also, while it mightn't be CBV driving it, you look at the Angus and Hereford heifer calves are a poor trade. And farmers are identifying that these calves aren't having the same, you know, ability to perform that, put on weight and get the carcass size up. So in effect, you know, CBV is working, but it's not actually the CBV they're looking at. They're looking at the, you know, the potential from the animals. But it would be better to see the CBV on the, you know, being more used, or, you know, at least you can have data to show that a low CBV animal is not getting the same in the ring.
I think there's still some marts that don't have the CBV piece up on the board in the marts, and it just, I mean, there's so much information in a very quick space of time for a buyer to potentially see. Like, it is a challenge if you're, you know, actively trying to seek them out, you know, unless
by the time you've the age of the calves worked out, you know, they're nearly gone through, like.
They are, yeah.
You don't have to be very quick, like.
No. Or have the homework done, exactly, yeah. Anyway, we'll chat a bit more about that in a minute, Aidan. Adam, beef trade, numbers are tight, it's fair to say. Numbers are still falling, are they?
Yeah, we're back another 600, Jack, which is great to see. I guess prime cattle kill, when I call it prime cattle kill, that's bullocks, heifers, young bulls and old bulls taking out cows. I think we're back down to 24,000, the lowest prime cattle kill so far in 2024. And that's putting real pressure on numbers for factories. Factories are out in force at the weekend, buying in March again. They haven't been out for a couple of weeks and they're back out in force. Now, what I mean in force, buying, you know, a couple of hundred animals across a number of marts at the weekend, one factory in particular. So that's a good sign of the trade as regards, you know, looking for cattle. They can't get cattle on the ground. And, you know, speaking to agents this week, they're scratching their head as to where next week's supplies, never mind the following week, but next week's supplies are coming from. So that's all positive, I think, for the trade. They've managed to hold it pretty steady this week. Bullocks 505, 510, 515 are the tops. And Heffer's 5.20-5.25 at the top's probably Donegal's out there in front of 5.30. Hearing flat prices as well, 5.50, 5.60 for over 30 mon cattle there, flat price. So all sorts of deals going on behind the scenes. So it's all pretty positive. Across the water, numbers tight as well. We're up at 6.03 there for an R4L bullock in the UK, which is positive as well. Yeah.
Adam, like for that number piece picture that you're painting there for us, like, I mean, that price of 505, 510, 520, like it's not where you would expect it to be at this time of the year after a heavy winter finishing period, kind of.
Yeah, no, we need it to be higher, Jack. But if we look back at this time last year, we were around the same, I think 525, and actually we started to slip after this sort of mid March period last year. So hopefully, I can't see that happening this year at all. In terms of where we're going and where we are with numbers, we're up sort of 12,000-13,000 head. That swing has to take place. We'll be reckoning we're back 40,000. So, just cattle numbers aren't out there, Jack. You know, we've had a very good year of exports in 2023. We've had a couple of big loads of store and forward cattle leave the country in January and February, and I think that's maybe feeding into this a little bit as well. And we've had confidence in winter finishing at an all-time low, so smaller finishers aren't at it. Interesting to look at the figures at feedlots. Feedlots are at record high numbers again. I think it was 37,500 for January, almost 40,000 for February. Never before have we seen numbers like that coming out of feedlots. So obviously factories were doing their forecasts, and maybe they've seen this coming in terms of shifting numbers into feedlots to take them out now. And it'll be interesting to see what the March figures hold.
Excellent. Staying with the trade, and we'll stay with maybe March trade and how that is balancing out on this. Like, I mean, are the agents going to the marts to try and fill the numbers, Adam?
Yeah, we're seeing a bit of that, but really in March this week, all the talk is with live exports. It's absolutely brilliant to see in terms of weanlands. I was in Drumshambo for a while Friday night. And you know, that's sort of 350 kilo weanland, you know, heading for 1,200-1,300 over 4 euros a kilo. We have the report in the paper this week. But in general, all marts are seeing those weanland bulls are highlighted the trade. And if you look at the Marpiz table again this week, you look for green arrows, it's always a good sign of the trade, and it's full of green arrows this week, actually on bullocks, bulls, and heifers in the weanlands this week. And you see heavy cattle as well, up sort of 10-20 cent in some cases, but really positive to see that Shorthorn Express. It docked in Green Ore obviously 2 weeks ago, loaded with bulls, 2,300 bulls went to Morocco. It's after it unloaded at the weekend, and it turned straight back, and it's on its way back to Green Ore. I think due into Green Ore again on the 23rd, and that's due to be loaded again with the same number of bulls again. And the talk on the ground is that's going to come back again. Once it docks in Morocco again, so. It's going to be a fairly regular occurrence for them. And look, that's absolutely brilliant, because that's adding real life into the trade. Talking to Mike Cassander and Ivor Amart, he had a really positive day's trading there on Tuesday as regards a lot of live exporters working down there, and a really, really good trade.
It's a real seller's market. So, Adam, isn't it? Like if ever there was a seller's market at this time of the year, like it's hitting it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Because weanland numbers are tight. There isn't a huge number of weanlands out there, so that's probably putting a floor under it as well. But you know, we would have talked about, you know, a month ago, you know, weanlands hit 4 euros a kilo. There's nothing thought about 4 euros a kilo now in terms of in the sales. There's lots of weanlands hitting 4 euros a kilo. Lots of them hitting in Drumshambo. And actually, those little lighter weanlands, I think maybe some farmers now are moving back to that lighter weanland because they can't compete with the exporter for that 300-400 kilo weanland. So they're back to a lighter weanland, 200-300 kilo. A lot of those in Drumshambo Friday night, autumn calving cows, lads may be taking the opportunity of offloading them now and taking the good price for them.
Yeah, wow. The calf trade, we touched off it there with you in that CBV question, and I'll chat to Aidan again about it, like, you know, but like it's generally positive, and I was doing some sums, Adam. I mean, pretty similar to last year for the time of year. You know, a Frisian calf is still making the same money. The Hereford and the Angus calf are still making the same money compared to last year.
Yeah, I suppose it's that lighter, poorer quality calf really is big under pressure, and the most the big change is this year, the lighter quality Frisian calf last year was down at maybe 5-10 euros or whatever. Yeah. That lighter quality Angus or Hereford calf this year is down probably the same money. So nobody wants that lighter, smaller calf. And look at we'll hear lots of talk about 5 euro calves and 10 euro calves. If you go to a mart to try and buy calves that you would like, a bunch of 10 calves that you'll pick out of a sale, you'll pay for them. You know, you'll be up at 100, you'll be up at 150 maybe for some of those, you know, good quality calves. And with the one issue of concern with all looking at export figures this week, and I know Tommy looked at them, is in terms of the Netherlands and what's happening over there. Like, we're back 64% on calf exports to the Netherlands. That's the black and white calf into the veal units. That's 26,000-27,000 head of calves that hasn't moved out of the country. Now some of them obviously are transferred over to Angus and Hereford calves, but you might wonder, well, where are they going? And if they're not going out of the country, are they staying in the country, and they're staying on Irish farms, and what impact that'll have in the future? Because we know, you know, exports are very, very important. And I suppose it'll be interesting to see what's happening in the Netherlands. I know there's nitrates issues over there, and in terms of those veal units are under pressure, I think, in terms of policy and where the thing is going. But, you know, we'll have to watch that one and see where that goes as regards. No, speaking of Bobea this week, they reckon maybe exports over there will pick up. It only got going in the last 2 weeks, that market. So maybe big numbers will transfer over there. But the problem is, slots on boats and Cherbourg capacity. We can't ramp up capacity really, really quickly. It's better maybe if we had to start earlier and go with a steady flow for a number of weeks.
Yeah. Excellent. No, that's fine. I'll chat to Aidan a bit about that later. And yeah, there's no doubt about it. The Netherlands is under pressure, and that was kind of flagged with a long way off because of the whole stock and rate piece over there. Speaking of stock and rates, Adam, grass, water. Still underwater in Calvin?
It's all about water. We're not talking about grass. And actually, I'm talking about grass on the beef page this week, and lads up this country will think that lad's stone mad. They probably think that every week. But I suppose I'm talking about planning, you know, when the thing does improve. And look, spring will come. Spring's a little bit late, but it will come, and it's about having a plan when it does come and be ready to move whenever ground does dry. But geez, no, we're a while off grazing up here. Like I was looking at Ballyhea's figures there, you know, we're twice the average, long-term average. We're up at the average already for March, and we're only at the 21st of March. Which is challenging, very, very challenging, because tanks are filling up again, Jack. Fodder stocks are going down, and costs are high on farms. You know, you take a cow that's calved in February, you know, to keep her up, she's in at 2 or 3 kilos a meal there, maybe a kilo a meal in the back of the creep to the calf as well. And you know, that's coming in at whatever, 35-40 cent a kilo. You know, it's taking money to keep those outfits going, you know. And if you don't do that, then your cows don't come back into heat and you don't get her back in calf. So there's a bit of management around that. And straw is you know, in terms of, it's hard to believe tipping a bale of straw into a calf creep at 55 euros. You'd wonder, is there has to be another way there, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no, and it, look what it is, and will drive guys to kind of do something else, won't it, Adam? Like, without a shadow of a doubt, you'd say. You talked to John O'Loughlin about closing up for silage, fertilizer, and all that crack. We'll hear that at the end of the show. But closing up for silage, there's going to be early silage, Adam, I'd say, because so many places have to be grazed. Like,
yeah, I'd say so. We talked about this. I talked to John about it in terms of what the advice was, and a couple of people have asked me this week about, will I go out and graze silage ground now, or what will I do? And I'm saying, geez, I don't think I would, because you're into the middle of April then, and then you're impacting maybe yield in terms of going in with a small cut and you know, middle of May or whatever. So I don't think I'd be grazing silage ground at this stage. I'd take a bulky cut, maybe go in again. And John was saying maybe go in early May, but again, he's in the south, he's not in the north. Early May probably isn't an option up here, but definitely I don't think I'd be grazing silage ground at this stage. I think I'd be going with fertilizer and going with slurry maybe then for the second cut.
Excellent, 100%. Adam, thanks for that. We'll hear you and John O'Loughlin having the chat later on. Super job, thanks for that. Chat to you next week. Darren, speaking of positivity and scarcity and demand and high prices, lambs are absolutely flying it. The few that are there now for this Easter.
Yeah, yes, Jack, the few that came out this week, it's remarkable trade. It's, if you were to look at hoggets and lambs, you're looking at €2 a kilo over this time last year. Now, that's going on the factory price court. If you were to look at the prices that lambs are making in the mart, they're probably a multiplier of that above last year. That, by what I mean by that is that if you were to look at the few, say, lots have sold so far in the mart, like €9 a kilo to quote this week, or 9.20, wouldn't go anywhere near buying them. This, it's they'd be upwards of €10 a kilo equivalent price. Now, I know it's mainly butchers that are buying. Now, I'd expect that there will be a significant increase in spring lambs on offer next week. There always is in the week leading into Easter. But given where hogget prices are and that they increase by another 20 cent a kilo this week, there's only one way that spring lambs can go, and that's up. Like, if you look at the official factory quote in Thursday's paper, was 9.20 for quality assured spring lamb. Kildare are up at 8.60 for August. Like, there was only 60 cents of a differential. There is reports of spring lambs being offered maybe 950, 960. But like the message I had in the paper was that if you have spring lambs, you should be really looking to see weighing up what's the best outlet, because given where the market prices are and how far they are ahead of the factory trade, if you have that type of a lamb, well-fleshed young lamb that's still well in the market, maybe that's the outlet you should be going. Now, it's not, it doesn't suit everyone. We have to be realistic. Part-time farming is a big side of the sheep trade, but where it does, it's important to weigh it up. Like, and definitely,
what kind of numbers, Darren? Like, so here we are, kind of like, you know, the 22nd, 23rd of March. Like, I mean, what kind of numbers of those kind of new spring lambs, like, will be coming on the market kind of now from a kind of a, on a week to week basis? Kind of, what's the size?
Sure, it's very low, Jack. Like, if we look at last week, there was none recorded at all. I'd say this week we'll be at a few hundred, maybe 200, 300 going through the system. And I'd say Easter week, generally, it's sort of, you'd be talking somewhere around 1,500 to 2,000. Like, it's not big.
Okay.
Relative to where the kill is at, it's not big. But I suppose it's the marketing of spring lamb. So you'll see that a lot of the retailers, a lot of butchers will want to say for Easter, let's come in and get the spring lamb. And so there is a sort of market employed there.
Yeah.
The main trade is still going to stay in hoggets, and the hogget trade is flying. It's like the hogget trade is really booming. But like, we're talking about spring lambs and talking about hoggets. To me, the class of sheep that has grabbed the attention in the last week has been the cull ewe trade. Like, that is just taken off entirely. Like, the price is up anywhere 20, 30 euros, so heavier ewes. Like, that sort of 90 to 100 kilo heavy, well-fleshed joe is now topping 200. There was a few sales, real standout sales. We, the Cameron, Sonora, Yo's met up to, Cullew's met up to 360 euros. Now, it was an individual Yo. There was a batch of them at 320. There was a batch of them at 300, 280.
Yeah.
There was a photo doing the round from Blessington this week. Big Chevy at Casio at 302. Like, there have been a lot of sales that have those sort of record prices that probably was never thought would be seen for cull ewes. Like, but like, leave aside those really fancy top prices.
Yeah,
it's when you get down to an 80 kilo ewe selling for 150 to 180 that you really see where the trade has moved on. Now, it's like those real sort of good tight framed yours, they're really driving at the moment. And a lot of that is from having an alternative offering, a lower priced offering to the market. That if we look back to this time last year and you were looking at Ramadan and looking at Easter, the focus was on hoggets. They were the factories. It was hard to get ewes killed in certain weeks because they were maximizing the kill in hoggets. Now they're not getting enough hoggets. And as well as that, some customers, it's given them an option to say, I have very good quality mutton here, and you're getting an option on that. And that has been, I suppose, a really important one for the Ramadan Festival in particular, because there is sort of a preference there for an older type anyway. So it is leading into, I suppose, maybe market preferences as well.
And Darren, is there anything kind of, we'll call it the general run of farmers can do in terms of, like, when they see cull ewe prices like they are now? Like, I mean, like, is there really anything you can do to kind of to get a piece of that? Like, you know what I mean? Or you know, you just have to wait and the rising boat will lift all boats.
No, there is, Jack. Like, if you've cull ewes to go, I seen in a number of markets this week I was in. This is even if you have, say, used to go.
But Darren, are they not gone? We'll say, are they not gone from last year? Dude, let's hang on to them till now. Here we are, the end of March. Like, why are they hanging around so long?
Some would be hung on to the sheep welfare scheme. Some of these would only, they might have true lambs maybe a few weeks ago. Early. A yore that gets mastitis or that gets an issue, they're not going to be the ones that we're talking about now. Right. But maybe a yore that got hurt or something, or there was scanned empty and people fed on after scanning, they're the ones that are making the real money. But the point I was just going to make there is that, like, I was in a couple of sales this week and I seen, in particular, there was two batches of yores that there was from I would have put them at from maybe 75 kilos right up to over 100 kilos. And like there were the buyer, the live export buyer that was buying those on the day, he just walked by them. Now, he still would have been getting the O's out of it because they were bought by another agent who I'm sure was grading them off after, and there was a bit of tangling after the sale.
Yeah.
But it just showed that he didn't want to hassle himself of that. Like, so yeah. There was a factory fella buying them, and he was sort of grading off heavier O's and they were coming back around. But like even simple things like that to know, or for me, the big one is, if you are going to the factory, is the cutoff point. So like if we take a layer, Chillon has a carcass weight limit of 40 kilos. The other factories, generally anywhere from 40 to 46 kilos. If you have a big ewe that's going over that, Jack, like yeah. You'll make time, even now with the way that the online selling has gone and the way that the trade has gone, it's not as important to be in a mart.
No, because
if the trade, going, if the trade is that hot,
oh, yeah,
exactly. And if you're up at 250, it's funny actually. There was a sale, one of those sales I was at. There was a batch of yours, and they were knocked down at 249. There was a thing, and the owner looked up at the auctioneer, and he said, "I probably have no business asking them to fill out to 250, have I?" So like, there is things that can be done if it suits to get used into a sale and avail of that, like. But
So as you said, the real heavy yours, the mark job is probably the place for them at the moment. Like, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
definitely
yeah. Darren, the weather side of things, like just on your side of the house, like I mean, it's like, you know, I'm sure it's like sheep looking are easier on land and easier, but I'm sure there's still a lot of grass being walked into the ground, and if you're feeding outside, it's fucking getting mucky, and you know, lambs struggling probably with the weather as well, like, you know, even though it's not that cold.
Yeah, the last bit you mentioned is probably the only saving grace, is that it's mild, it's very mild. So at least farmers are getting a chance to maybe get out yours and lambs and get them moving and take a bit of pressure off. But as you say, like it's if we think of where a lot of sheep are, it's on the more marginal lands, and that's really taking a beat at the moment. Like and the other big thing that's, I suppose, maybe compounding issues is farmers that would have lamb maybe towards the middle to the end of February, they have lambs now that are at the yours are at peak milk yield, peak intake, and they haven't got out maybe with fertilizer or slurry. And that's putting real pressure on the job now as well. Like that is grass supplies are getting tight. But going back to say someone is lambing at the moment, yeah, like utilization is poor. It's challenging to feed. Like I was even writing this week about say feeding and conserving grass supplies. But you really, if you have a big batch, Jack, it's very hard. Like the way you nearly need to be going at it is batching off, say, yours into older yours, maybe younger yours that would benefit from a bit of feeding, prioritizing your better some better quality grass to yours that won't need feeding with it,
right.
And maybe trying to balance that way. But like it has been a hectic few weeks in, like anyone that has had sheep indoors, not being able to get them out. It's no different with say Aidan will probably talk about it, and Gavin and cows in now. It's the cleaning off the pins, the topping up the straw.
The workload is doubled and trebled,
the
isn't it?
The workload is exactly. Yeah. It's savage looking. Like there's no real upturn in the forecast that I can see. Like it's holding poor. No, so it's a case of trying to, I suppose, manage as best as you can. And try and deal the hand and maybe conserve grass supplies and batch out your yours and lambs.
Darren, I'm going to leave you on the entitlements. Last week we talked a bit about selling and sales of entitlements. The amnesty is ending in 2024 for those. So for those that are considering selling entitlements, the clawback, the 20% clawback is finishing up in 2024. But in terms of the price that farmers are getting for selling entitlements, and maybe we'll just flesh out the leasing bit as well that came up there in the quickfire. Talk to me first about the value of entitlements now, 2024 entitlements, we call it, and what they're making from some of the traders.
Yep. So there is a bit of variation across the country and even within regions. So, but in general, if you're looking at an entitlement that's So the national average entitlement value is about 155 euros. So for stake, that is the standard. From about 155 to maybe 200, you're generally talking about 2.2 to 2.3 times the value, maybe even 2.4 times the value. That's the sort of benchmark there. Higher value entitlements, there is a bit more demand in cases, so you're looking at 2.3 to 2.4 times the value. But then a sort of outlier that you mightn't have thought is that some of the, say, traders that we talked to this week is that for really low value entitlements, so just above the minimum value, so the minimum is over 110 euros, that in cases there is more bite for those, and that they're selling for maybe 2.5, 2.6 times the value, because some prospective buyers are looking at those and saying, well, they'll appreciate in value.
Absolutely.
The smaller money to get into to start off with. And there is a bit more demand for those.
Yeah.
So it all depends, I suppose, on what the entitlement value is. But in general, sort of 2.2 to 2.4 times the value is buying a lot of them.
Okay.
If we're looking at the leasing in Jack, so, and we take the same sort of entitlement range again. So if we take the sort of the standard or the national average to maybe 200 euros of entitlement value, it's generally anywhere from sort of 45 to 50% returning to the owner of the entitlement. So the person leasing it, and the 50 to 55 going to the person leasing in. If we're to take a lower value of entitlement down at 110, 120, so again, our unit value, it's anywhere from as low as 30% going back to the owner to 40% going back to the owner, because obviously they're not as attractive at the moment. There isn't as much money at play or to be split out, and they are struggling a bit. And then if you take the high value entitlements, which there isn't a massive amount of them coming onto the market, say upwards 300s, they are going anywhere from 55% to 60% of the value going back to the owner.
Okay.
So that's your general run of things.
And Darren, for someone that's considering that in terms of leasing or selling, like how do they go about it? Like, do they just ring up some of these traders who would say that advertised there in the journal, what's the kind of proper way to go about it?
Yeah, that's a common way. There is agri consultants that and advisors that also are matching up farmers as well, and say do a bit of business that way. They wouldn't be maybe handling as big a numbers, but in general, that's the way they are. Like me and you, Jack, could trade entitlements as well. Like, you know, if you're good in ag food, you could put up the the entitlements on your system. I can accept them in. There's a key code that I accept them in, and that's your entitlement transfer there. Okay. But in general, there is a lot of people that are going through agents. Agents are handling a lot of them, and it's a case of matching the buyer with the seller. At the moment, what agents are saying is that there still is a lot of indecision. So there's still a lot of farmers that are, I suppose, farmers as a rule don't really like selling things. We don't like selling land. Yes, we'll sell output, but we don't like selling, say, an asset like land, and a lot view entitlements in the same way.
Yeah.
The ones that are selling entitlements at the moment are maybe the ones that know that they're not going to be farming actively from here on in.
But
in general, if it's a few surplus entitlements, there's a good few farmers that are holding on and saying, I might get land, I might not. But there'll be a lot of decisions to be made in the next few weeks. And that's a real message coming from the those that are handling entitlements, is just don't leave it too late. In particular, if you have very low value entitlements and you're looking to lease them out, that if there isn't huge demand, well, then definitely don't leave their doors to lend, because the demand reduce might be even lower. Again, like.
I hear you 100%. Excellent, Darren. Listen, lots in that. We'll leave it there for this week. Thank you. Chat to you next week. Aidan, I'd say selling or leasing entitlements is probably not high in the agenda for many of your guys at the moment.
Well, funny enough, Jack, I am hearing a bit of movement among dairy farmers for it as well. I suppose those that have taken on land, maybe that don't have entitlements, they're interested in, you know, as an opportunity now to make.
I forgot. Sure, most of you guys have someone to calve the cows, like, you know what I mean. That you don't actually need to do with them.
The business of farming is calving cows, but also the bookwork and you know, making wise decisions. So that doesn't end, you know. I suppose when you're milking the cows, Jack, you've plenty of time to think, you know, which is one of the advantages, maybe.
It is, and as you say, coming into peak milking times at the moment. Like, I mean, how, in terms of kind of, you know, guys, Aidan, and managing the weather piece, I'll just pick up from kind of where I was chatting with Adam and Darren on the weather side of things, like, and the struggles or whatever. Like, I mean, in many respects, dairy cows, milking cows are easier to manage, you know, than kind of either sucklers or bull and heifers or, you know, animals that are kind of have free reign. You know, I mean, your guys have good tight management pieces, and they've infrastructure in place and roadways and all that kind of thing. A lot of dry stock farmers don't have that.
Yeah, Jack, I suppose, look, they've made the investment to get them there. They didn't just land there, you know, so that investment has been made. And I suppose the payback is at this time of year when you're suffering from wet weather. Like, it is extraordinarily wet. Like, we haven't had a dry spell since the end of January. And normally, you know, you might have a wet spring, Jack, but you'd always get that week or so that's kind of relatively dry. That just hasn't happened so far. We're getting maybe a day or a half a day. Like, last Wednesday afternoon was a lovely day, but it's so variable at the moment. Like, and there's no chances really that, you know, you have to have the facilities, whether that's in the field for in terms of the paddock access and the roadways, or in the shade in terms of the cubicles and the feed face. And of course, the silage to feed them, and that's running out in a lot of farms as well.
Is feed tight, Aidan? Are you picking up? Like, I mean, for any of your guys would say that have big demands. Like, I mean, is the back wall appearing in most places at this stage, or you know, is the bit of grass that they're getting in either by day or by night kind of helping the job?
Sure. Look, obviously, if you're getting in grass, it's a big help. I suppose the issue is it on those farmers that are on heavier soils. They're not able to get even any bit of grass in. You know, they're fully housed because it's just land is too wet to graze at all. Whereas those in the drier land, I suppose the way I can look at it, Jack, is a lot of those farmers on the drier land, they have all the dry land grazed now. So you can break any farm. You know, there's a bit of wetland in every farm, no matter how dry the farm is. So they're now stuck with those areas that are kind of wet or difficult to manage, or maybe poor infrastructure around them, or else they've got very high covers in some of those fields that they were avoiding grazing up to now, hoping for that week that I mentioned earlier on, that, you know, this dry week will come and we get in there then. That hasn't happened this year. So even those on dry land are under pressure as well because of that. Look, a lot of them are able to go out by night or out by day. And to be honest, silage and grazing by day or by night is not a bad diet. You know, overall, Jack, it's fairly well balanced in terms of protein. Okay, it'd be better if there's grass full time, but that's not possible. Particularly where you're limited where they can go next. So they're not too bad. But to answer your question, there is a lot of silage moving. I was talking to a farmer down in Adair last week and on the main road, and he was telling me there's lorry loads of silage passing heading for Kerry every day. Right. And even in my area, like in Tipperary, I see a lot of silage on the move as well. Now, I don't know whether that's just going to dairy farmers or just going to beef farmers or who, but look, there's a pinch there anyway. And even driving around the country, I do see silage pits getting very small. And I'd say farmers are getting worried.
Yeah, and at this stage in the game, Aidan, I remember you saying a couple of weeks ago, like, you know what I mean, that's, you know, March, longer days, day lower, daylight, etc., and all that kind of thing. But in terms of grazing targets and meeting grazing targets, you know, in terms of, is it typically your guys would have kind of 60% graze for paddy's day, I think would have been the kind of target. Is what are guys kind of changing the targets? What are they doing? Are they leaving aside paddocks, or you know, what's the kind of
like the targets this year, Jack? They're just out the window, really, as far as I'm concerned. Like, okay, look, they're not going out the window for everyone. You know, if you're fortunate enough to have a dry farm and you were able to get those cows out during February and for most of March, you could still stick with your targets. But I mean, if I was talking to a farmer in you know, on heavier land down in Kerry or Cork or anywhere, like Monaghan or Cavan or Tyrone, about grazing targets when literally you can barely walk out the field yourself without getting stuck, like it's that bad, you know. And I was writing online during the week about it. You need to look at, like, heavy soils, and there's about 30% of the country of the farmed land in Ireland is considered heavy soils. That land needs evapotranspiration to dry out. So that's, you know, what's rain, water that's lost through plant growing and also the evaporation through sunlight and wind and all the rest. If it's constantly raining, you just don't get a chance for that to happen. Whereas if you're on free draining land, limestone land in Tipperary or you know, East Cork or wherever, that's free draining, you're actually losing water from beneath. So you're going to, even if it's raining, you're still losing water, you know, it's still draining away. Like, whereas it's just, and that's why that land dries out so quickly. But you're it's a different story on that heavier land. So a target for me on that area is just not applicable this year. Now, it would be normally, you know, and you'd say, look, you know, you'd be 2 weeks later. So your target for 60% graze could be the 1st of April. And you'd be starting your second round then the 15th of April or thereabouts. Like, so that's kind of the typical Ballyhays target. But it's just like, you know, for me, it would be annoying people to be talking about targets, I think, this year, because it's we have to acknowledge it's exceptionally wet.
Aidan, I touched off the quick fire question, touched off the calf trade and where is that? Are guys getting calves away? Are you kind of hearing any stories of kind of big sicknesses, big hold ups and big sicknesses and then having to hold on to calves for longer because they're sick and all that kind of thing? Like, you know, is there much of that going around?
I haven't heard too much of it, Jack, you know, and it's probably a good sign, you know, that we're not, like, if there was a lot of problems, we'd definitely be hearing about it more. I think the whole calf health and calf welfare has improved a lot over the last number of years, and education around colostrum management and you know, feeding calves well has also improved. And of course, there's been, back to the investments, Jack, there's been huge investment in dairy farms in terms of calf housing. So all of those things are adding up to BVD, take a bit probably. Of pressure off in spring. And BVD removed, yeah. Now, there was, you know, outbreaks of BVD even up to last year. There's still a few this year as well, of course. But it's not as big an issue as it was. Now, and having said that, the weather is bad, you know, but it's thankfully, you know, touch wood. Look, we still have a bit to run on it, obviously. So it could all break down yet. People can often remember Easter being very difficult in terms of calf welfare and calf health. Calves at Scour managing them over the Easter period. I remember myself years ago. So look, it could still happen. Like, and it's about being vigilant. It's about changing the straw, cleaning out those sheds. And straw isn't lasting as long as it was, as long as it would have normally. So that's another cost on farms, but it also means that there's extra workload because it needs to be replaced more often.
Yeah. The calf trade, like, is, as I said to Adam or Winnie earlier on, like, I mean, it's more or less the same prices. The Frisian bull calf, give or take, is making 50 euros.
And the Hereford. You're saying that's a good thing.
I'm saying it. I felt when I first sat down that I thought the calf value was dropped a lot. You know, the kind of a way that you. But I think it's more that there's a lot more kind of, I call it, lower value Angus and Herefords out there, and they're not making the money in the mars. Like, you know what I mean? 5 to 10 is as much as they're making, isn't it?
Yeah. For those heifers out of heifers, you know, they're really the low. And Jack, you know, a decent Frisian bull calf would be better probably than some of those, you know. But look, you're going to get that, and that's just and you know, you can talk about CBV and those calves. But I mean, if you're putting a dairy heifer in calf, it has to be easy calving. You know, you're just you just know whether you'll have dead heifers or you'll have sections. Like, that's what you'll be left with otherwise. So you're always going to get those calves. Yep. And I suppose, look, they're going to be there. Alternatively, they would be a male dairy calf, and you'd say to yourself that, well, maybe the Hereford or Angus is still preferential to that.
Yeah. And Aidan, I mean, it's fair to say that with more sex semen, there's more of those beef type animals coming out of those heifers, we call it your dairy yeah. heifers, and probably there is like the 20 or 30,000 calves that would have been slaughtered at the young age before that they're probably coming on the market as well. So all in all, there could be 100,000 extra lower value type beef calves there, like, and that's probably what we're seeing more of in some of the births.
Yeah, I suppose so. And they're definitely, some of them are going through the marts for sure. Some of them are, you know, they're not getting to the mart stage even. They're being sold privately at older weights. And there's also, I know plenty of dairy farmers that maybe would have had those crossbred type bull calves, and they still have them in the shed. They're feeding them meal and milk powder, and they're hanging on to them to see, is there going to be a market for them later on, you know, when they reach the 8 week mark or they're weaned off milk altogether. So they're there, you know, and they haven't probably hit the mark yet in some cases. But look, there are Jersey crossbred bulls moving. I know I talked to Tommy Wiles, like, that, you know, there was a few abandoned and they did okay. You know, they're not going to make, you're not going to get wealthy by selling them, but they're moving, you know, there's someone wants them and there's a little bit of demand for them. But look, Czech is a very small part of the market. Like, I mean, it's still the Friesian bull calf and the Hereford and Angus are the mainstay, and that's what's going to continue. Like, I mean, I'd say a lot of farmers now the new rules around calf slaughter might have caught them by surprise this spring, or, you know, it came into force in January. So maybe there's a little bit more time needed for those farmers to make adjustments to their breeding policy, not to have them next year.
Yeah. Excellent, Aidan. You're returning on the dairy pages. You return to the kind of the whole issue around nitrates this week. You had a couple of weeks of farm features. You're back on nitrates this week.
Yeah, Jack, I was down in Moor Park last week with the Blackwater Discussion Group, and they're looking at nitrogen use efficiency. And I suppose this is it's a measure that's out of good while, you know, to be fair, and nitrogen surplus. And there, I suppose there are two ways of looking at the amount of nitrogen that's been utilized within the farm gate. So dairying is often accused of having a very high nitrogen surplus, and it does, you know, when you compare it to other sectors such as tillage or dry stock even. The average nitrogen surplus among dairy farms is 160 kilos of N per hectare. Now, not all of that is lost, but a share that is. They're saying up to 30% of that could be lost in terms of leach into waterways. So I suppose the group we're talking to, Chagas researchers and UCC researchers, William Birchall and Brendan Horne were the main people running it. And I suppose the main topic was that every member got to know what their nitrogen surplus was. Now, the surplus is made up of the difference between all the nitrogen coming into the farm. So that's, and that you buy in bag form. So bag fertilizer, there's nitrogen in feed, such as meal, and also in silage. If you import slurry, which is rare in you know, for those farmers, they wouldn't be importing it. Or if you're buying in animals, you know, bulls, young stock, replacement heifers, whatever. That's all nitrogen coming in. Nitrogen goes off the farm then in the protein in the milk. You know, that's where your nitrogen is. Most of your nitrogen leaves the farm. So that's, you know, the higher the protein in your milk, the more nitrogen you're getting rid of if you're exporting slurry or you're selling silage or selling, you know, calves, young stock or cattle. They're all cull cows. That's nitrogen off the farm. And what's left then is your surplus. So the top third in the group had a nitrogen surplus of around 120. And the worst third then, we'd say the bottom third, had the nitrogen surplus, a high one, at over 190. Right. And I suppose you're looking at the difference between what the features of the farms that had the low surplus is that they all had excellent soil fertility, they were appropriately stocked, and they're growing lots of grass. Whereas the other cohort had, you know, weren't as good in each of those sectors. Interestingly, then they had Mike Deneen in, a researcher down there as well in Chagas, and he was looking at plantain. And I mean, big reductions in nitrogen coming out of the urine from cows that have been fed plantain. So, which is another, you know, maybe this is the way to go to reduce that surplus. And it was identified that urine splashes are the main cause of the nitrogen surplus being so high in dairy farms. And it's really the Achilles heel, Jack, of the grazing system, in the sense that we've cows outside grazing, which is great from an environmental point of view, great from a greenhouse gas point of view. But the urine splashes are a bit of an issue because there's between 500 and 1,000 units of nitrogen in each of those splashes. And over the course of a year, you're spreading that those urine splashes are getting around, you know, 20-30% of the paddock. So there's a potential there for losses. That's the main route to loss in a grazing system. So it's about reducing the amount of nitrogen that's in each of those splashes is an important way of reducing the leaching from dairy farms. So that, in a nutshell, Jack, that's what we were discussing.
No, lots more on that in the journal this week. Super stuff. Aidan, 100%. We've talked about most of the big issues at the moment and how to deal with it. So fair play and thanks for that. And chat to you next week, folks. Earlier, as I said, Adam had a chat with John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro about all things Grassland. Let's have a listen.
Delighted to be joined by John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. John, I suppose rain continues to fall up here in the northwest. It's been a really difficult month, to be honest. And every week you're looking at the weather, hoping that the next week is going to come better, and it hasn't done so far. No fertilizer out up this country at all at this stage. Do we have to change tack now as regards what we go out with, or the amount that we go out with, or is it just proceed except it's just going to be delayed, or are you still going to go with the, or what's the advice there? Is it still a half bag of urea once ground conditions sort of start to come right?
Yeah, it's a great question, Adam. It has been unbelievable tricky, like, and you know, you feel sorry for everyone. Like, silage stocks are low, slurry is a big issue, So we need to use the slurry as responsibly as possible and to its maximum benefit. So prioritising that towards silage ground. But nearly some of the bother now, Adam, is the cover has gone too strong, you know, even for low emission spreading. So tricky. In relation to getting out with nitrogen, it has changed. Normally, we'd be saying the first application would be a half bag of urea. I think with the stage of the year we're at now, it's definitely probably protected urea or NBPT. Protected urea is probably the way to go now, to be honest, Adam. And I would probably be going with maybe 30 units. And it seems counterintuitive because places are awash with grass. But the problem is that when we graze those, it's going to take a while to work through them, albeit. But we need to get that second round grass coming back. And we're probably lulled into a false sense of security there when we have loads of grass. But it's really the second round that we need to get onto, Adam. And getting out with your nitrogen is going to be very important. Very little has been spread, but anywhere where it has been spread, lads are getting decent responses to it. And I suppose if we're trying to get grass growing, going out with a tractor and a spinner is probably, you're not going to do as much damage as going in with a tanker, to be perfectly honest as well.
Is protected urea still the product of choice there for that early application? Yes, look, protected now, it's all true the way, but like uptake on dry stock farms hasn't been as good as dairy farms, probably, that's fair to say. And like, what are you finding on the ground? Is there a reason for that, or why, sure, why has it not been uptaken on dry stock farms as good as dairy farms?
It hasn't been great, to be perfectly honest now. It hasn't been great uptake on any farms. Joe, you know, for the amount of noise about it, like, so I wouldn't go... Yeah. Singling out to dry stock farmers. I know, listen, it's a little bit slower, and you know, there is incentives in different co-ops from the dairy side that will incentivize it. But I suppose, on the in general, I suppose there's maybe a fear about using urea. You know, some of that is entrenched in, I suppose, our mentality from 30, 40 years ago when there was the only fertilizer that was manufactured in Ireland was CAN. And there was probably an industry at the time that said, you know, can is better or won't. You won't cause as much acidity on the ground. And so, like, if you ask an awful lot of farmers whether urea works or not, they might say, jeepers, no, it doesn't. And
yeah, yeah, you find that, yeah.
Do you know, it's the reality of it. So, but I suppose in relation to going back to maybe that perception there that can is better than urea, there's no difference. They'll both cause the same amount of acidity through use. So that one is done and dusted, right? In relation to the value for money, the protected urea treated with NBPT is going to be the best value, to be honest, Adam. I suppose just getting used to it and trying something different can be a little bit daunting, but what we've done this year is we've launched products that farmers will be used to. So NBPT treated urea in 27, 2.5, 5, 24, 2.5, 10, and 18, 6, 12. And some of the maybe poor reaction that was there from protected urea previously is where a farmer would spread or was used to spreading maybe a compound with a bit of P and K versus just straight nitrogen. And obviously there's going to be a different reaction. So I definitely think this year we're going to have to try and get on board with it. Otherwise, you know, with all the emissions and the water quality, these NBPT treated urea is going to help you. And the fact that the can-based alternative is much more leachable and there's much higher emissions from it. Whereas when you go with the urea NBPT protected urea type product, we're going to be in a way better situation. On dry stock, I suppose, listen, you could argue that maybe fertilizer applications have reduced significantly in general anyways. So maybe that's part of it as well, Adam.
Yeah, in terms of, I guess, you know, fertilizer application and then going for what we can spread, there's a new, we'll say, rules and regulations there for this year, and it's important that listeners and viewers are aware of that, because I know, we'll say, local consultants and Chagas up here in Cavan are writing out to their clients, you know, stating that you really need your up-to-date soil samples and you need a nutrient management plan now done to know, we'll say, what you can spread. A little bit more confusing up this end of the country is a lot of dry stock farmers and dairy farmers taking pig slurry to maybe mix tanks or use it as a fertilizer on their farm. So that's another added one. Just talk to me through the process there. So soil samples first, and then can I calculate myself then what fertilizer I can spread, and what else do I need to take into account? Is meal there, is imported slurry there, or is it just simpler just to go to an advisor and get this done?
This is really, really important, Adam. This one, like, this is really, really important. This is senior hurling, because you can run yourself into bother very, very quickly. We've covered it before, but I suppose it's so important that you have a soil sample. The reason for that is if you bring in phosphorus, you have to prove you have a need for it or a requirement. So if you take in that pig slurry or cattle slurry, you have to prove that you need the phosphorus. And to do that, the only way to do that is to have a soil sample, right? Where it gets a little bit more complex is your N&P allowance is based on last year's stocking rate. So you need to have that information. You need to have your eligible area. You need to have the concentrate that was fed to work out your N and P allowances. They're the ones that are regulated. You can spread as much lime as you want, spread as much potash, but the N and P are very, very important. So the first step for anyone who maybe is worried about this or hasn't done anything about it yet is to go back and see if you have soil samples. If you don't have soil samples within 4 years, go and get them taken straight away. And what we'd be saying is if farmers are starting to think about getting going with a bit of fertilizer, is to buy maybe, if you don't know what your N&P allowance is, buy maybe your NBBT protected urea to start off with. Get out a shake of that and then drive on. But I suppose, Adam, in reality, we're coming very close to silage fertilizer spreading. Like a lot of farmers would have probably gone last weekend, St. Patrick's weekend, in a normal sense. But obviously, ground conditions aren't allowing. So that's kind of where we are. It's very, very tricky, but you can run yourself into a fine on the register and you can get a fine on your BIS as well. So very important to get that information right. You can go to your Chagas advisor, your private advisor, ourselves in Grass and Agro. We have a tool there to work it out as well, but it takes a little bit of time. You have to get the right land area. It's not just saying, you know, I have 100 acres. It's the adjusted area is very important. That's what your allowance is based on. So takes a little bit of time, but you have to work on it and get all the detail right.
No, so look, some really good advice there, and important that farmers get good advice on that, on their farms. It's not a matter of proceeding on, and I suppose planning ahead there is very important. It'll be a lot easier to fix it going into the season rather than coming out of the season next October when you know you're in trouble. I suppose grazing silage ground, a lot of questions coming in at the moment to us on terms of, do I go out and graze it? Do I not? You know, we're coming to the end of March now. I guess traditionally, you know, for first cut silage, you'd be closing up maybe 1st of April for an end of May cut. It's getting going to be tight now to get all that silage ground grazed off on some farms. So, you know, I've been saying to some farmers, you know, you could be better just go for that bulky first cut and go for a quality second cut. Some other people are saying, well, no, graze on, because it'll have a shorter growing time and it'll still be okay. But look, grass is going to head out anyway last week of May, first week of June, so I'm not too sure about that advice. But what are you seeing on the ground yourself, John? Or what are you saying to lads?
Very, very tricky. So I suppose it is case by case, and that seems to be get-out-of-jail-free card when you're giving anyone advice. Like, you know, you'd have to look at your own situation now, Adam. And I've seen you use that one before myself. but like, in reality, if you have some grazing done, the merits of grazing your silage are really, really good. Like, so if you can get out and you can clean off that, the grass is growing a long time, it's yellowish, there's yellow button. If you have some grazing done, maybe 30, 40%, whip around into the silage ground now, get it grazed off, and then go back into the rest of the first rotation on the grazing ground, and the stuff that you had grazed previously is going to be coming back. So that's one situation. In reality, a lot of lads have no grazing done, so that's a different kettle of fish. I would probably be going slightly different. I would be saying, you know, top it up with nitrogen, but we'll go for an early cut, an early first cut as well, and then try and get an early second cut. Anytime you delay your first cut, you're delaying your second cut by double the length. So if you delay a week on the first cut, it's 2 weeks on the second cut. So I'd be trying to go with two early cuts. You're right, grass is going to head out. That's as sure as night follows day. So I think that's probably, you know, get the neighbours talking, maybe it could be...
So just to put you across that, you're saying not to go in with full rate fertiliser maybe then, because it's going to be a shorter, you're still going to go in maybe end of May and try and get a quality cut, but you're not going as much fertiliser for the first round.
Sure, you could go the start of May if the weather allowed, Adam, you know, and get the neighbours talking there, grease the moor, and the dairy farmers would be... To be under pressure, like.
They'd be taking fours of you stuck at the bottom of the silage field. That'd be the problem at the end of that. Well, that'd be the problem up here anyway. Yeah, yeah.
If it hasn't dried by then, we're finished anyways. But like, but yeah, 100%. I would be saying, like, you know, don't say jeepers, I have to go for a date. I go try and top it up with nitrogen. and get it whipped off as early as possible. There's no problem with cutting in early May, and then you're going to get a decent quality. You're going to get your slurry back out in it that maybe you hadn't had a chance to spread. You're going to get a decent response to the slurry. It's still going to be early-ish, rather than waiting, you know, the sun splitting the zones in the middle of June to spread it. And I think that maybe is a good tactic, but it depends. And, like, you know, we always say it, and we always say it in September, October, November, making good quality silage is the most important thing, I would say, to any dry stock farmer. And that is something that we are poor at. But there's no point us talking about it, and Adam, when we're talking about, oh, you need to feed this much concentrate in the middle of November. We have to think about it now, and it has to be priority number one. And if we don't set up to make good quality silage, it's never going to happen. We'd always make enough poor quality silage by accident or weather anyway. So very, very important that we think about it. If you can graze it off, it's worth an awful lot. And it doesn't take a huge amount out of it. You'll see it on paddocks that have been grazed already versus maybe some of the ground that has been grown over the winter. Like, paddocks that have been grazed are coming back ferocious quick, and they nearly catch up with each other in a very short period of time. It's the same with silage. So listen, it's one of those ones. Try and aim for the best quality silage possible.
In terms of just finally, John, clover week, it's coming up, we'll say mid-April. Look at clover's probably a long way from farmers' thoughts up this end of the country at the moment, but still very important in terms of reducing, you know, fertilizer applications on farms and reducing costs on farms. What happens as part of that clover week in the middle of February?
Clover week is an initiative driven by Chagas and the Grass 10 team in Chagas.
Sorry, middle of April. Apologies, middle of April.
Jeez, you nearly got me out. I was going along with you. But the Clover Week, I suppose, is an initiative driven by Chagas, Moore Park, and the Grass 10 team as well there. John Maher and Joseph Dunphy. Caitlin Looney's driving it on as well. So we were actually launching it this morning. It was cringy enough now. Declan Conn, your colleague, was below getting his hair and makeup done for the photos. And he was throwing fierce shapes below at him. But listen, it's basically about trying to get the message out on clover. And so there's going to be a load of farm walks. There's going to be dry stock. There's going to be dairy, you name it, all across the country. Heavy farms as well. You often say that it's not for heavy farms. So they're going to cover that as well, Adam. Yeah. They're going to talk about the pros and cons, how you do it, how you get it established, how you mine it, how you graze it, how you fertilize it. All these messages that farmers need to know, and really try and create more awareness around clover, the role it has to play for agriculture going forward. So it should be a good week. We're going to do a few bits and pieces for it in Grassland as well, and we're going to try and push it on, and I'm sure you do the same yourself, Adam, in the journal too.
Absolutely, we'll watch this space. Look at John, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Good stuff from John and Adam. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching, and thanks for listening. Thanks to our contributors once again, Adam, Darren and Aidan, and to John O'Loughlin. Thanks again to you for any of the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868 366 4465, and we'll do our best to get an answer for you. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming. Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy. Watch Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show on farmersjournal.ie on Friday evening. This week we ask Adam Woods what's behind the booming cattle trade. Darren Carty on the trade for leasing and selling entitlements ahead of the BIS deadline. And Aidan Brennan on managing grazing as the rain pours down. Watch Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show on farmersjournal.ie on Friday evening.